Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Brief on Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 23, Text Number 35. Is that right? Bhatu purastad atmanam.
Bhatu purastad atmanam.
Stri sahasra pritam tada.
Stri sahasra pritam tada.
Shamya tad yoga gatim. Samsayam pratyapadyata. Bhatu purastad atmanam. Shri sahasra britam tada. Nishamya tad yoga gatim. Samsayam pratyapadyata. Bhatu purastar atmanam. Stri sahasra britam tada. Nishamya tad yoga gatim. Samsayam pratyapadyata. Bhatu, of her husband, Purastat, in the presence, Atmanam, herself, Stri Sahasra, by a thousand maids, Britam, surrounded, Tada, then, Nishamya, seeing, tat, his, yoga gatim, yogic power, samsayam pratyapadyata, she was amazed. She was amazed to find herself surrounded by a thousand maids in the presence of her husband and to witness his yogic power. Purport. Devahuti was everything. Devahuti saw everything miraculously done. Yet, when brought before her husband, she could understand that it was all due to his great yogic mystic power. She understood that nothing was impossible for a yogi like Karadama Muni. Om Gyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahiyam Dharati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Bangayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. Let's move on, shall we? Text 36 and 37. The sage could see that Devahuti had washed herself clean and was shining forth as though no longer his former wife. She had regained her own original beauty as the daughter of a prince. Dressed in excellent robes, her charming breasts duly girded, she was waited upon by 1,000 Gandhava girls. O destroyer of the enemy, his fondness for her grew, and he placed her on the aerial mansion. Purport. Before her marriage, when Devahuti was brought by her parents before the sage Kardama, she was the perfectly beautiful princess. And Kardama Muni remembered her former beauty. But after her marriage, when she was engaged in the service of Kardama Muni, she neglected to care for her body like a princess, since there was no means for such care. Her husband was living in a cottage, and since she was always engaged in serving him, her royal beauty disappeared. And she became just like an ordinary maidservant. Now, after being bathed by the Gandhava girls, by the order of Kardama Muni, by the order of Kardama Muni's yogic power, she regained her beauty, and Kardama Muni felt attracted to the beauty she had shown before the marriage. The real beauty of a young woman is her breasts. When Kardama Muni saw the breasts of his wife so nicely decorated, increasing her beauty many times, he was attracted, even though he was a great sage. Sripad Sankaracharya has therefore warned the transcendentalists that one who is after transcendental realization should not be attracted by the raised breasts of a woman, because they are nothing but an interaction of fat and blood within the body. Okay. Well, there's only one message there, I think. You may be a great yogi. Isn't it interesting? An interesting contrast here. You may be very, very powerful. Samshayam Pratyapadyata. Devahuti was amazed. By the power, the potency of her husband. So he's an extraordinarily powerful character, Kardama Muni. Simply by his mystic potency, he was able to create many wonderful features. An aerial mansion, a lake, He was in Bindusarovara. So he travelled all over, had come to this place, and provided her with all of these facilities. So you see, he was a very powerful personality. Yet, despite the fact that he's such a powerful yogi, he was still bewildered by the breasts of his wife. So there's a warning here. The real beauty of a young woman is her breasts. When Kardama Muni saw the breasts of his wife, he was attracted, even though he was a great sage. So there's a warning here from Sripad Shankaracharya, who's a Mayavadi. Right? Still, he's giving some warning here for the transcendentalists. Even though there's a clash between the Mayavadis and by the impersonalists and the personalists, there's a philosophical clash. Still, the impersonalists are considered transcendentalists because they eschew the material. They give up. They want to give up the material. And so, in that sense, there's a common purpose or a common foundation upon which they stand. And that is the desire to transcend or to overcome, to be free from the attraction of the material energy. And so even though there's a clash of ideology, when Srila Prabhupada was in Dr. Mishra, he went to his Prabhupada went with some of his then very young disciples. The devotees weren't even chanting 16 rounds at this point. And Mukunda Maharaj mentions in his book how they went to this ashram upstate New York, and it was 2:30 in the morning, and he woke up and he could hear this sound. Couldn't work out what it was. And they realised that actually it was Prabhupada chanting japa. They'd never heard it before. Prabhupada chanting japa. Anyway, one of the students at this place was challenging, not challenging so much, but asking Prabhupada to give it a lecture on how we are servants of Krishna, and that's our eternal position. And one of the students was quoting Dr. Mishra, saying how isn't our purpose to become one with the Supreme? That's liberation. And Prabhupada was very forceful in his negation of this position. And of course, the point being that if you're merged with the Supreme, then how can you render service? Huh? How can you render service? And Prabhupada's comment was, if you return into the womb of your mother, how can you render service to your mother? And the student said, well, you can't. can't. And Prabhupada said, exactly. So, you know, there's a clash, if you like, and it's an eternal clash between the personalists and the impersonalists, the Vaishnavas and the Mayavadis, on this point of what is the supreme destination. And for the devotees, the supreme destination is that we're always servants. Krishna Nitya Das. That's our eternal position, is as a servant. Not that the supreme goal is to become one with the supreme and then lose one's identity. That's considered to be spiritual suicide. But despite the fact that there may be a philosophical difference, there is no argument about the power of the material energy to bewilder the aspiring transcendentalist. In fact, many devotees have the experience that the material energy seems to become even more strong once one makes a determination to become a transcendentalist, to become a devotee. The power of the material energy is amplified. But before, when we were bewildered by the material energy, we didn't notice it. But the external energy has two features or two characteristics. There's the covering potency that keeps everybody in Maya. But then for those who are trying to get out of the clutches of the material energy, she has a pulling down potency. Pulls down. So, regardless of how great a transcendentalist one might be or become, one still has to be very cautious and careful in handling the material energy, because it has its potencies. And one of those potencies is the pulling down potency. Avaranatmika is the covering. Potency of the material energy. And the praksepatmika, I think that's it, something like that, is the pulling down potency. And that pulling down potency is especially for the transcendentalists. I mean, see here, Kardama Muni is a very exalted and powerful devotee. Not just a yogi, but he's also a devotee. Yet, he's still somewhat influenced. So the devotees are not immune to and even great transcendentalists, not immune to the influence of the material energy. You know, on the one hand, they're able to see the spiritual, the transcendental, but because we're working with the material energy, that still has its influence. It's not easily transcended. So therefore the warning here. The real beauty of a young woman is her breasts. When Kadama Muni saw the breasts of his wife so nicely decorated, increasing her beauty many times, he was attracted. even though he was a great sage. And Prabhupada mentioned this point, you know, he was once, more than once, but at least on one occasion, left by his disciples with an attractive woman. And he chastised his servant. He said, "You should never leave me alone." And of course the servant was somewhat, he thought Prabhupada was a pure devotee, you know, an empowered transcendentalist. But Prabhupada said, "Yes, that's true. But at the same time, you know, just because we're on the transcendental platform doesn't mean that we can't also see what's happening on the material level." So Prabhupada said, don't leave me again in that situation. Because that's bewildering for his young disciple, because he's thinking Prabhupada's a pure devotee, he's a great transcendentalist. And of course he is. But no matter how great a transcendentalist we might become or be, we still have to be careful of the influence of the material energy, and especially that pulling down potency. And so therefore there are guidelines. There are warnings. You're in the beginning of devotional service. The first 10 items, first 4, I think, one should, what's the first item of the 64 items of devotional service? Guru Padasraya, one has to take a shelter of the spiritual master. What's the next item? What's the next item? Should know that at least the first 2 out of 64. Huh? Initiation? Is it?
Serving?
You're just guessing. And what is it? What should one do? Jimun and Jimun? How did any of you guys get initiated if you don't know these answers? What's the second item of the 64 items of devotional service?
Srimantasevaya.
Huh?
Srimantasevaya.
Wrong. What is it? What am I doing now? Huh? Preaching, no, that's... Gopal. Huh? Lectures, no. Asking questions. You should inquire. No? Then, I can't remember whether it's the third and the fourth or the fifth and the sixth, but one should give up things that one would ordinarily keep, and one should accept things that one ordinarily wouldn't like to... So, we're given yama niyama, the positive activities and the negative prohibitions. So for the transcendentalists, we take certain vows, even for the householders. Sense control is a feature for all of the ashrams. You might think for the brahmacharis, for the vanaprastas, and for the sannyasis, sense control. But actually it's considered to be an activity or a principle that has to be followed strictly by the grihasthas, by the householders, because a householder is in a situation where they have facility for sensual activities, But because of that facility, one then has to be more vigilant. But the brahmacharis and the sannyas, they don't have any association with the opposite gender. But for the householders, there's that interaction. And so therefore, in order to maintain the religious principles or the devotional principles of renunciation, it's harder for the householders. More, and there's a greater imperative to be stricter and more sense controlled. You know, the example is given of having a feast but not being able to eat it. Right? So when you're very hungry and you're surrounded by lots of food, but you have to control your senses and not touch it. But the brahmacharis and the sannyasis, they're smart. They don't go anywhere near the feast. But for the householders, there's that close proximity to the breasts of his wife, right? don't touch. Got the idea? So it's test for those householders who can follow the principles of celibacy. That's provides them with great strength, actually. That's the strength of the Vaishnavas. That even though they may be in the association of a woman, their wife, still they're able to control their senses, control the mind and the senses. This is why, even for the householders, there's respect. It is not as renounced, but because the householders are able to engage their senses in the service of Krishna and not be distracted, not be bewildered by the influence of the material energy, by being able to follow the regulating principles. You know, for the materialists, when they hear the four regulated principles, you know, you tell people sometimes, I say, "Oh, what do you do for fun?" They're bewildered by the fact that one has to be so strictly adherent to these rules and regulations. So they see it as a great imposition. "Oh, what do you have to do that for?" But for the Vaishnavas, they see the benefit, and feel the benefit, and are able to transcend the natural urges by strictly following the rules and regulations of the ashram. One of the reasons why there should be chastity in the householder ashram, you know, the women shouldn't walk around in such a way as to be provocatively exposed to disturb the minds of the husband, and vice versa. we keep ourselves covered. And there's some separation. Young householders sometimes, or newly arrived devotees, they have difficulty following the regulated principles, or no illicit sex, for example. And you know, they sleep in the same bed. So, you know, first advice is don't sleep in the same bed. No? If you want to follow, there's certain advice that can be given to make sure that as householders we are able to strictly follow the principles that are that we're obliged to. So there are guidelines. That's one of them. Can't follow the regulated principles. We sleep in the same bed? Yes. All right. Okay. There's an easy solution to the problem. Because, you know, the form of a woman is naturally attractive for a man. It's just a fact. We don't even have to go to school to find that out. Huh? But here it's a warning. What to speak of the great transcendentalists? How are we, the little transcendentalists, going to be successful if we don't abide by some of these basic rules? You know, these are our austerities, our great austerities. They're fairly simple guidelines. We generally don't dress up to attract. You know, why do women put on makeup? Anybody tell me? Any of the women tell me? Why do the women put on makeup?
Attract a man.
Attract a man. Right. Yeah, that's what I thought it was for. So generally, as devotees, we don't do ourselves up. Right? What do the men do? Well, most of them anyway. What do they do? Shave off the head. Oh, not the head, the hair. Yeah, we keep your head. Cool-headed. You know, because with hair, people think they're handsome. Men think they're handsome. Fair enough. So therefore, we shave. We shave it off. Because, and you know, this, all of this so-called beauty is temporary anyway. But even though it's temporary, the material energy is still powerful. Right? It's temporary, we can say, oh, it's illusion. Right? But even when an old man sees a young, attractive young girl, you know, boing, can't help but look. Right? It's still very powerful. Even for the transcendentalists. So therefore, especially, we want to transcend the material energy, so therefore we need to abide by some basic... We need to have some common sense. And as we know, one thing about common sense is that it is rather uncommon. But not everybody's got it. Otherwise, why do we make so many mistakes? So, the story of Karadamba Muni and Devahuti is instructive on so many levels. Because they're very, you know, they're like the archetypal devotee, or they're a great example of devotional service and devotional practice, because On the other hand, even though we know that the material energy is very powerful and we should resist it, at the same time, for young men and young women, it's pretty much an imperative that they get married, right? So we're caught with this conundrum where we're supposed to give up material life, but at the same time we have to embrace it. And we have to do it in the context of Krishna consciousness, or in the context of spiritual practice and spiritual knowledge. But, you know, in our youth, our natural tendencies or our natural urges almost push us in the other direction. And that's why Kardama Murni and Devahuti are so instructive, because they show us the practical way of how to engage these very strong and irrepressible tendencies that we have. So how to use that? There's the attraction for spiritual life, which we hold very dear, but there's also that irrepressible attraction also to the material. So here's how we... Here, and their example is a good one. But the warnings are there. One has to be very, very careful in dealing with the material energy, especially when it comes to the relationship between the men and the women. And even within the householder ashram, one has to be very careful. And we need to understand the principles of chastity, the principles of devotion, the principles of yukta vairagya, engaging things in Krishna's service, but done in an appropriate, sensible fashion, so that our spiritual life remains always progressive. It's a balance. Yuktahara viharasya, isn't it? Yuktahara, balance. Yukta. That's the meaning of a yogi, one who controls the senses by engaging them in the master of the senses. That's a transcendentalist. All right, I might finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions? What was the first bit?
I find it very regressive, thoughts that...
You find it?
It's very regressive to...
Regressive.
Regressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To comment on a woman that if she has a big breast, she is beautiful.
Doesn't say she has to have big breasts.
No, but it says the real beauty. Real beauty of a woman is big breasts.
No, it didn't say that.
In the purport.
Doesn't say big breasts. It just says any breast. Doesn't size isn't mentioned.
That's what her breast.
Yeah.
If somebody who, like, for other women, like, it's so, does it make them insecure if they do not have, like,
I don't know. But it doesn't, first of all, it doesn't say big breasts. And you'd have to ask women with small breasts whether they are insecure or not. But I don't know. And I suggest it's not important.
But why it is called real beauty?
Why?
Why does it say that?
Why does it say that?
Yes.
Probably because it's true. This is a feature of material existence. Just reread it and meditate on it. Why is it that the breasts of a woman are attractive to a man? That's the question, right? Why? In the late 60s, there was four young men who were very influential. The Beatles. Have you heard of the Beatles? You've heard of George Harrison and you've heard of My Sweet Lord. Anyway, they had a keyboard player. His name was Billy Preston. And he had one hit record. You know what the name of the song was? That's the way God planned it. So that's the answer to your question. The material energy is designed in such a way so that men and women are attracted to each other. Have you noticed that? And one of the things that men are attracted to in women is their breasts. Prabhupada's just confirming it. The Bhagavatam is just confirming that which is a fact of life. Right? Now, why? We want to enjoy. Krishna is an enjoyer. And because we are part and parcel of Krishna, we also want to enjoy. And part of, you know, enjoyment in material existence is sex, simply put. That's what it is. That's one of the differences between a man and a woman. Men and women is, women have breasts, men don't. Or if they do, they've probably got something wrong with them. Right? So this is just how the material energy works. I'm surprised that you ask.
No, it says real beauty, so that doesn't...
Real beauty.
Yeah, so it could be called beauty, but not real beauty. Like it can be for eyes too.
It can be. There are warnings about the eyes also. That's odd, but yes, why not? Usually the breasts are seen before the eyes. Usually. Hare Krishna. Anybody else got a question? Hang on, we'll come back to you. Go on. Speak a bit louder for me.
So Kardama,
what did he do for 10,000 years?
He's done the austerity for...
Yes, performed austerity.
For 10,000 years.
So he's a great yogi. Yeah. Very great yogi.
So what hope do I have, or do we have to control ourselves, not to get influenced by the material energy?
Next question.
tell the audience.
Tell the audience. Which audience?
The audience.
Online audience.
Yeah, you have to chant Hare Krishna. 16 rounds a day. At least. Good japa. Good japa. Absorb yourself in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So hearing. Hearing the mantra, hearing our philosophy. That's what hope we have. And it's not difficult, actually, not impossible. It can be done. Must be done. So, and one has to be realistic about, you know, the influence of material energy. Don't be in illusion thinking that I'm so advanced, you know, I'm not going to be affected. One has to be careful. Be careful. You're a young man. You're handsome. Well, watch out. The girls will want to get to know you. Right? Can't say there's anything wrong with that, because that's what goes on. Just be careful. And chant. And take good association. You know, yes, you'll get married, no problem. Just do it in a sensible, measured fashion. Take good advice. And yeah, be a strong sadhaka. Confirmed. Anybody else? Pushpinda.
Even though we understand that we are not meant to do anything with Mayavadis and their philosophies,
yeah,
but there are some good messages that we take them and apply them the way Prabhupada has mentioned in this report here.
Yes.
So, what's your understanding says about taking good things from impersonal use?
Take it from Prabhupada. Let Prabhupada decide which piece of advice we should accept and that which we should reject and follow in his footsteps. But don't associate with them. That's Lord Chaitanya's recommendation. That's why we associate with the devotees primarily. And we take our instructions from the acharyas. Within the Vaishnava parampara, we don't take instructions from the Mayavadi, because the Mayavadi philosophy is antithetical to the philosophy of the Vaishnavas or the Bhagavat philosophy. Because they deny the personality of Godhead, and that's an anathema for us. So therefore, we don't hear from them. But sometimes Prabhupada does quote them, but let the devotees like Prabhupada, you know, let the acharyas who are fully equipped with discrimination, they can work out what instructions we can take and what we should remain aloof from or not to associate with. So, you know, it's interesting. Prabhupada had studied the philosophy of Sankaracharya. That's why he was able to dismantle it so effectively. Right? But we're probably not. Until you're, you know, you're fully conversant with the Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and the Nectar of Devotion, you know them inside out, then you can analyse the commentaries of others. Right? And generally we wouldn't study the teachings of Sankaracharya. We would look at other Vaishnavacharyas before we went to study the teachings of somebody like Sankaracharya. So let's just take the good advice, their good advice, through the agency of Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas.
Did we say like our body is like a temple, we should take care of it well, even we are devotees of it? So why Devu didn't take care of her body while she was serving Kardama Muni when she was serving?
Well, she was dedicated to serving her husband, and he was living in an austere environment, and so she, as a dedicated wife, accepted the amenity, the same facility And so that was her austerity. She embraced that austerity enthusiastically and dedicatedly. So it wasn't so much that she was not looking after her physical needs, but rather she was attending to the... She was absorbed in the service of her exalted husband. And so... accepted the austerity enthusiastically and without second thought. It was just natural for her. Yes, Prabhu. Yep. Yep, accepted it. And so, you know, it wasn't that she wasn't sleeping and she wasn't eating or, you know, but she accepted a more austere circumstance than she would have been previously accustomed to. So she didn't accept it in the sense of self-abnegation. You know what I mean? It wasn't like she said, okay, now I'm going to perform austerities and neglect myself. Wasn't done in that mood. It was done in the mood of service for a higher purpose. And so that wasn't her meditation. Oh, I'm going to give all of these things up. But she embraced the mood of service to her husband, and that entailed some form of austerity, which she did enthusiastically. And as it turned out, she was rewarded for her austerity. Okay, anything else? Pentraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.